And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 165 of Radio Free Asgard. My name is Tom Harris, and I'm your host, and we're coming at you, as we always do, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where it is fall, folks. Yeah, by the time you hear this, we'll have passed the autumnal equinox, which technically happens about 3 hours from the time that I'm recording this. So happy Mabon to all of you, those of you in the pagan tradition who may celebrate the autumnal equinox, and happy autumn, happy fall, as it were, to everybody else. And yeah, so not a lot going on. I mean, I'm obviously, as I talked last time, still planning this big vacation. And of course, I'm having some issues here. And some of the planning that's going on, but hopefully things are going to be working out. And kind of right now filling the days, you know, trying to figure out, okay, well, where am I going to go after this? And, you know, wondering if the weather is going to cooperate, because, you know, it's the autumn and weather has a way of not cooperating at times, and you know, maybe getting stuck on islands and that kind of thing. And so it's really kind of hard to plan more than a day or two ahead, and it's just frustrating. Anyway, I really don't have a lot to talk about. Now, this week, we're going to be shifting gears again because we have come, of course, to the end of the Loki limited series. So what we're going to do, at least for the next few weeks, is we're going to go back in time again. We're going to go back to 1969, and we're going to cover some of these later Stan Lee, Jack Kirby issues in my pre-vacation period. And I don't know if we're going to continue in that route after, but, you know, these are kind of one-off stories, and there's not a lot of, you know, continuation. And I think after I get back, we're going to be shifting gears again. But at least for the moment, we're going to stick with some of the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby stuff. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold
indeed, and this week we are going to be covering The Mighty Thor number 171. Has a cover date of December 1969, retailed for 15 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby and Bill Everett. Shows Thor being held by the Wrecker, and the Wrecker has kind of got Thor around the chest, and he's, you know, kind of pinned Thor back with his crowbar, and they're on top of a building which seems to be crumbling beneath their feet. And we have this view down into the city. So obviously this is a very tall building. And yeah, and we see like a ship in the background. And, you know, this is New York City. And we have the cover blurb, of course, The Wrath of the Wrecker. It's a nicely composed cover here. I'm not convinced that Bill Everett is the best inker for Kirby, but we'll talk about that later. And anyway, we open up to the splash page, The Mighty Thor, The Wrath of the Wrecker, produced and presented by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, the Titans of Thrills, embellished by Bill Everett, the Earl of Embellishment, lettered by Sam Rosen, the Lord of Legibility, and refereed by Irving Forbush, the Caliph of Confusion. And the splash shows Thor, and he's standing on top of a building looking down into the street. And it's kind of funny, but he's not actually standing in the middle of the street for a change. And he's ruminating on what's going on down below. I have to point out in this picture that Mjolnir looks tiny compared to Thor's hand. It's just another Kirby inconsistency, folks, and that's just kind of what you get. Anyway, Thor is looking down, and he's saying, "The city endures, teeming with life, violence, hatred, and love. Yet fallible and frail as yon mortals may be, the Thunder God shall watch over them. Such is my promise. Such is my fate." And Thor is still hanging out on the building. He's kind of jumped down to somebody's balcony or some kind of ledge or something. And he says, "Never has the city been more tense. Never have the people been more fearful, more divided. for true happiness doth seem to elude them all, the rich, the poor, the white, the black. Yet such is the nature of life, for not even the gods themselves know true contentment. But hold, what do I hear from yon window below? And is looking in somebody's kitchen, eavesdropping. And there's a guy wearing a pink shirt, and looks like he's eating breakfast or something, and there's a woman in there. He has somebody on the radio.
Although police have captured the gunman, his famous victim is in critical condition.
And the guy's saying, only a madman would have shot Pedro Luis Lopez. And the woman's like, if he dies, the entire city will be up in arms. And Thor's eavesdropping. He says, I've heard of this man, Lopez. He is among the most dedicated, the most beloved of all those who crusade for civil rights. Such a man would be sorely missed. Such a man must not find death before his time. If his condition be not hopeless, then I do swear he shall not die. And I'm surprised that the people inside the kitchen don't hear him because he's right outside their window. Anyway, Thor starts whirling his hammer around and he takes off towards the hospital. And he's just assuming that, this guy is at this hospital because, they don't actually say, do they? And as he flies to the hospital, he's talking, what sad and grievous times are these, when the course of history may be altered by a single shell. Yeah, let's keep in mind here when this was written. This wasn't long after Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King were killed. So this is, that was very much on people's minds during this era. So Stan is just reflecting what's been going on in society at large. What now is needed is not the power of a warrior god, but the medical skill of Dr. Donald Blake. And he bangs his hammer on the ground, and he changes back to Dr. Blake on the roof of General Hospital. And Dr. Blake comes down the stairs from the roof, apparently. And he asks a passing nurse, quickly, nurse, where's the patient, Lopez?
Dr. Blake, he was already taken to surgery, but when he had known that you were available...
I am available. I just pray that I am not too late. And he heads towards the operating room. And he's outside the operating room, and there's these guys in purple suits, like, Secret Service or something. And they are searching him, and they're like, sorry for the search, doctor, but we can take no chances.
Blake, I thank heaven you're here, says one of the orderlies.
The bullet is lodged precariously close to his heart. Blake throws off his coat, and he's in the scrubbing room and scrubbing up for surgery and all that.
Gentlemen, if I may be allowed to assist.
Assist? You're the only man alive with skill enough to do the job. I've always wondered, Blake, about your long unexplained absences. I suppose it's a strain of your work. After an operation such as this, you've got to get away.
Yes, doctor, sometimes I have to get away. But now all that matters is the patient.
He's definitely doing a kind of a William Shatner thing.
But now, all that matters now is the patient.
You've got to save him. If he dies, the city will be torn by riots.
You got to love that they care more about the riots than they do about the guy dying.
I would fight to save him even if his passing would be unnoticed by a single man. He is a human being, and as such, his life is sacred.
And he's all geared up and ready to do the surgery, and we see this Lopez guy on the operating table. So then we shift scenes, and we shift to a hospital in upstate New York, and we have these guys here who, they kind of look like bad guys to me. I mean, certainly in Jack Kirby comics, the bad guys are always wearing bad suits. So we have this guy in like a double-breasted pinstripe suit, and it's kind of this ugly cord, greenish-brown. And then we have another guy who's wearing literally a green plaid suit. This is really, really hideous. And, of course, the guy wearing a sort of Dr. Blake suit. And he even kind of looks like Dr. Blake, and he's holding a rifle. And then there's another doctor type, and he's, of course, dressed in a lab coat. Because that's what doctors dress in, lab coats. And they're talking about their prisoner in here. It's like, it's impossible. We can't keep him under sedation forever.
We have to. If the tranquilizers ever wear off, we've had it.
This is a job for the army, not us, says the guy with the gun.
They're working on it now, says the doctor, trying to find some sort of isolated island they can take him to.
Sure, that's our only hope. Then even if he breaks out, there's no place he can go.
Although we're just too jumpy. It is impossible for him to break out of here.
The only thing I worry about is, what if he starts getting immune to those tranquilizers?
And just as he says that, the floor starts getting ripped up with a crack, and we see this sort of metal
flooring being shoved aside, and it's kind of wrapping around the guy sitting in the chair. And he's like, hey, what's that? Hey, look out, he's loose. And the wrecker comes bursting out. Says,
and I'll never be captured again. My crowbar, they took it from me. I must have it back.
And he goes on a rampage through this office, and eventually he finds a sort of gun cabinet thing and rips it open and grabs his crowbar out.
And hands such as mine, it is the weapon supreme. Now take warning, you fools. No power on earth can stand against the Wrecker.
And we see his face now for the first time in this issue. And he's got this big, huge, toothy grin. And very, I don't know, it's almost an un-Kirby-like face. But again, you know, Kirby's style is changing. And this is an era when his style is really changing a lot. And the guards come, and they're trying to recapture him, and they're shooting at him and whatever.
What could you expect those puny guns to do you when I can shatter the walls with a single blow? Nothing that's human can stand in my way. And he smashes the walls down and sends everyone flying. And he's going to breaks out and gets outside the hospital thing. But the power that I possess is that of an immortal. It is the power that was intended for Loki himself. But because of a lucky accident, it's mine instead.
And of course, that's a reference back to issue number 148. Wrecker's kind of crawling out through the hole in the wall, and there's guards coming after him, going to be basic, you know, guard slash thug type looking people.
There he is! Quick! We got to get him surrounded! Look how he stands there, as though it's him who's threatening us!
And the Wrecker draws his crowbar back, and I guess he is threatening them.
I've nothing to fear from any of you! You fools just never learn, do you? It is me. It's the Wrecker who's the threat. But I'm not just threatening you. I'm going to trample over the whole blasted earth till I get my final revenge on Thor.
And he takes his crowbar and he smashes the ground, takes out a couple of trees as well, which, we don't like tree murder, do we? With a baroom and sends everyone flying. And the Wrecker comes bounding out. He says,
it was Thor who fought me, then beat me when I first got my power. If not for him, they've never had a chance to catch me and keep me a prisoner.
And it looks like Kirby's drawing like he's going out to the freeway trying to flag down a truck. And he's kind of jumping right out in the middle of traffic. And then he seems surprised that the truck almost runs him down. Because, of course, you know, people just dart out into traffic all the time. And he's like,
when I reach the city, hey, this'll teach you to stop when a Wrecker flags you down.
And he hurls his crowbar with, I guess, pinpoint accuracy at this truck. It smashes through the truck and just takes out the whole engine with a spang. And, yeah. And so we then see the Wrecker, this is some time has passed, obviously, getting out of a big pink red Cadillac-looking car in the middle of New York City. We see the Chrysler Building in the background, so you know it's New York. That's actually one of the few times you actually see a recognizable building in a Jack Kirby drawing. So, you know, the Wrecker's getting out of the car in the middle of Manhattan, and he's making like Thor, standing in the middle of the street and yelling at people.
Sure was neighborly of that guy to lend me his car, although it kind of helped him to see what my crowbar could do. Get off the streets, everyone. The Wrecker's taking over now. And I'm standing in the street. I see you whispering to each other, pointing at me like I'm some kind of nut. Me, the Wrecker, the most powerful of all.
And he takes his crowbar and he starts smashing up the stores and stuff.
Well, this'll prove I mean business, and it'll do more than even that. If he's anywhere near the city, it'll bring Thor running. And that's what I want most of all.
So, let me get this straight. So, the Wrecker parks his stolen car in the middle of the street, and then he just starts smashing up stores. Okay, I guess that'll work. I'm sure it will work. And we then shift scenes, and we're back in the hospital, where Don Blake is operating on this Lopez dude.
Forceps, doctor, quickly. I could have sworn I felt the building shake. It's impossible. New York is built on solid rock. There hasn't been an earthquake in.
And Don Blake is like, wait, you're right. There was a tremor.
It's madness. It is impossible. And yet everything's tilting, swaying.
And Blake is like, there's no natural force behind what's happening. It's something man-made and far deadlier than any quake could be. And how would he know? Anyway, I guess if it's big enough to shake the building, I guess it would be.
Keep the patient securely strapped to the table. Apply adrenaline as needed until I return. He can survive for another 15 minutes under constant vigil.
Blake, you can't panic. You can't run out on us now.
And Blake is hobbling away with his walking stick and saying, let them think what they may. There's nothing more I can do for Lopez while the city's in danger. And he goes out the roof and he bangs his stick on the ground. It's like, there's something sinister, something deadly going on out here. And whatever it may be, the God of Thunder must face it and vanquish it alone. And he changes to Thor and he takes off. And now in the name of Omnipotent Odin, Thor flies to battle once more. And we can see that there are buildings nearby. There's pieces breaking off of them. And it's obviously pretty, whatever this earthquake thing is, pretty powerful. Actually, probably too powerful, if you really think about it. The quaking doth now subside, says Thor, as though some unknown foe awaits my coming. The power of enchanted Mjolnir hath brought me to this spot, and yet no enemy do I behold. Only those below who flee in fear, as from some nameless fate. And he's looking down, and he doesn't see that the Wrecker is actually standing right behind him on the rooftop. And the Wrecker is thinking to himself, ha, I knew the rooftops would be the place to find him. All I had to do was shake things a little bit, and then wait. And Thor's saying out loud, mayhap my first surmise was wrong. Mayhap 'twas an earthquake, nothing more. In which case I must return forthwith to him whose life I sought to save. Forget it, Thunder God. Your returning days are through. And Thor's like, a human voice behind me. And we have basically the scene that appeared on the cover here. The Wrecker is going to grab Thor from behind. And he's holding Thor in his, kind of got a lock on him with the crowbar.
I may sound human, Longhair, but this time you're up against a guy who can take you.
That hate-filled snarl, that merciless tone, I would know it anywhere. 'Tis the Wrecker who doth attack.
Go to the head of the class, Tinhorn. How's it feel to be in the grip of a power that can crush your own?
And Thor looks like he's suffering a little bit. But Thor just does this weird forward roll thing and kicks the Wrecker. Looks like he kicks him right in the nuts as he's kind of rolling forward.
Thor hath no time for idle threats. There be too much at stake.
So you're going to fight to the finish, are you? Says the Wrecker. Okay, big man. That's the way I like it. Especially since it's going to be your finish.
And he kind of swings at Thor, swipes his legs out from under him.
Ha! Didn't think I could move so fast, eh? I'm stronger and smarter than the last time we fought, and this time I don't quit until you're just a rotten memory.
And the Wrecker's trying to smash Thor. Thor's kind of whipping his hammer around, blocking his shots, just kind of dodging him.
'Tis true, thy power doth seem the equal of mine, but why canst thou not harness it in the fight for good?
That's what's wrong with the world. There's too many do-gooders in it. But when I'm done with you, there's going to be one less.
And Thor is still fighting back, and he's thinking to himself,
there is no more time to bandy words. Not while he who is called Lopez now lies between life and death. Villain, be gone, for there be one whom Thor must save, one who is worth 1,000 such as thee.
And Thor smashes the Wrecker in the face, knocks him back.
Don't give me any more of that holier-than-thou bull. I always looked after number one, and I always will.
And he's smashing the chimney and walls and stuff, trying to get Thor. And Thor's managing to dodge.
Aye, so long as there be such as thee. Never will mortal man find the glory his wraith doth seek.
And we get a full-page spread here of the Wrecker smashing the wall and Thor being thrown back, and they're both pontificating here.
Glory! The only glory is in making out.
Oh my.
In winning over all the other slobs. Like the world's a great big grab basket, and it's every man for himself to grab what he can. That's what power's for, so you can use it to beat your way to the top, no matter who you step on going up.
Though thou art called Wrecker, I have known such evil in many guises, yea, under many names. And ever must thou be destroyed, for thou art like unto a living plague.
And we have the Wrecker, he's tackling Thor, pushing him off the side of the building, and they're falling down the side of the building.
Skip the Simons, mister. This is where I wrap you up. And then with you out of the way, the city'll be easy pickings for me and my powerhouse crowbar.
And they're falling here, and the Wrecker's still talking.
Dragging me over the roof won't do you any good. Long as I got my crowbar, I can take these knocks as good as you, and nothing's gonna get it from me.
And they smash into a sign that's on the side of the building, like one of these old-fashioned marquee-type things. Smashes the sign, and it breaks their fall, and they both land on their feet on the ground.
Thy words have served but a single purpose. They have shown thee to be beyond reason, beyond comprehension. Though the rest of thy race be not faultless, still do they try. And so long as they dare strive for justice, for truth, then ne'er shall they be forsaken.
Truth! Justice, that's just a lot of hot air, man. The only truth is power. The only justice is what the strongest one decides. That's why I gotta win, because I'm the wrecker.
And Thor is smashing back to
Thor says thee nay. Thou shalt wreck no more.
You pounded a hole clear through the sidewalk.
And they fall down through the hole, and they're in the subway now.
Huh, a fat lot of good this'll do ya.
My only purpose was to conclude our battle where those above would suffer no injury.
Big deal. I can always smash at them. But now it's you I want. It's you I gotta get rid of. Forever.
And they're fighting in the subway, and Thor, for some reason, is not fighting back. And the Wrecker's like,
too chicken to use your hammer against me, huh? Well, it's lucky I ain't as squeamish about that stuff as you.
And Thor's thinking to himself, he strikes out blindly in a senseless rage. But I am sworn to take no life, not even such as his. I must find another way, and by the golden gates I shall.
And at this moment, the subway train is coming through, and they're standing right in the middle of the track. And it looks like it hits both of them as they're fighting, and Thor's thinking to himself,
the speeding train, of course, it hath furnished me the answer. My time grows short, my patient doth await me. Evil one, thou hast done thy worst and failed. Now 'tis time for Thor to call the turn. Strong as thou art, 'tis I who am the power. 'Tis I who am the god of thunder. 'Tis I who must prevail.
And they kind of pushing themselves off of the train so the train can pass. And Thor is holding back the Wrecker's crowbar.
It ain't possible. You can't hold my crowbar back with just one hand.
When the cause be just, all things are possible. Thou couldst have joined me to reshape a world. But thy goal was to destroy and conquer for thyself.
And Thor takes his hammer and he kind of whips the Wrecker onto the third rail. Of course, everyone knows that's the electrified rail that powers the trains.
The third rail! You're tossing me onto it!
And you got this big burst of white Kirby crackle as the Wrecker gets thrown onto the third rail. And it didn't seem to really do much good. He's like,
ha! Again you failed! The power that Loki gave me is too great.
Oh, it wasn't Loki that gave it to him.
Not even this current can stop me now.
And Thor seems to have known that was going to happen.
In truth, 'tis just as Thor expected. I have no wish to slay thee, but rather to add the Uru power of mine enchanted hammer to that which thou mock. Power and to let thee live, whilst draining thy strength, and turning thee to the mortal thou hadst been.
And the jams Mjolnir into the third rail, and they get this giant electrical burst thingy, and the Wrecker is kind of surrounded in this electrical power, and he's like, no, Kalganite, and knocks the Wrecker out, and Thor is advancing in for the victory here. And Thor's like, 'tis done. Though he shall awake, the Wrecker shall sleep forever. And now I must away.
And we next see, we wrap up the whole story in three panels. How typical.
And they're back at the hospital, and the Dr. Blake is pushing the patient out of the operating room.
It was a masterful bit of surgery, Blake.
A good man will live. That's all that counts, says Dr. Blake.
But I'm surprised at you, Doctor. Running out the way you did, abandoning your patient. You might have lost him. How could you be so cold, so unfeeling? What kind of a man are you?
Let's just say that none of us is perfect.
And that is Thor number 171. And we have a next issue blurb. Next issue, Jane Foster returns. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. So that is Thor number 171. And, of course, we will be having a few comments about this. But first, a message from one of our friends.
You like cheap comic books, right? Well, I'm Professor Allen, and I talk about cheap comic books on the Quarterbin Podcast. In every episode, I'll dissect a single comic from my collection. as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for the issue. Forget about $4 new comics that you can read in 4 minutes, or crossover events that can cost $100 to collect. Join me in the quarter bin, where even bad comics are a bargain, and good ones are a steal. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Visit us at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search Relatively Geeky or Quarterbin Podcast in iTunes. I guarantee it'll be worth every penny.
Indeed, and we are back. Thank you very much. And so, we do have a few comments here on Thor number 171. Boy, is this a big contrast. You know, I always say this when we jump back and forth between like the modern age and back to the Silver Age again. And it's amazing that so much happens in these old issues. There's always something going on. Every page is jam-packed full of stuff. And the stories have a lot of different little parts to them in a way that modern stories kind of drag everything out. And yeah, this is no exception here. I mean, the change of tone between this and something like Loki, obviously, is very much more of a superficial story. Story-wise, this is a really weird one because in some places it's very much Stan, in some places it's very much Jack. It's essentially an issue-long fight scene, and you can see that there's a lot of Kirby here in the dialogue. I mean, obviously, Kirby did most of the dialogue in the story. There's some inconsistencies, of course, as you usually get, and especially in these later Lee Kirby collaborations where, you know, we know that Jack is not at his happiest. This is right before he left Marvel, so, you know, there's definitely some stuff going on. Artwork still magnificently laid out. Some of the particular pages are really, really great, but some of the detail work is really lacking. It's definitely not what we're used to seeing from Kirby. And some weird experimentation still going on, obviously. I think a lot of it has to do with the inking of Bill Everett. I don't think that Everett is the best inker for Kirby. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, better than Coletta or not as good as Coletta or whatever, but it's different. And it's really busy. And that's one of the things that I kind of wonder about, if Kirby has always put all of this kind of really busy line work into his issues, and you know, people like Coletta are just not inking him. I mean, it is possible. I mean, there are some really detailed panels here. This full-page spread, for example, where we have the Wrecker smashing through the wall and Thor kind of reeling back is page 15. It's a really beautiful piece of composition, but the Wrecker just looks off. And the Wrecker actually looks off through a lot of this issue, and I kind of wonder if it's the embellishing of Bill Everett that's making things just look kind of wonky and weird. But again, you know, it's Kirby, and it's exciting, and you know, it's a reasonably entertaining story. It's nothing really special. It's nothing really deep. And basically, we've got a full issue fight scene here between Thor and the Wrecker. Of course, I have to point out again, is one of the story elements that doesn't make a lot of sense and is not very realistic, because obviously a comic about a thunder god is completely realistic. But we have the scene where the Wrecker is hammering the ground or whatever he's doing, and he's causing literally buildings to collapse. And it's not every building. It's just kind of very localized, apparently. Because most of the city seems to be, you know, relatively unscathed. I mean, it wouldn't work that way in real life. Obviously, if he's hammering big enough that the buildings are falling down, this is going to be felt all over the city, and there's going to be damage all over the city. And I get why Thor abandoned his patient to go fight the Wrecker, but you kind of wonder, well, where's the FF? Where's the Avengers during all of this? And this is one of those questions that I've asked over and over again in some of these Lee Kirby stories that maybe they didn't really think through. You know, maybe the Fantastic Four was out of town that day. You know, the Avengers were off fighting Kang or something. Yeah, you know, I don't really know.
The other big gaping flaw in this plot that I can see is the way that the Wrecker was defeated. Okay, so the Wrecker was enchanted by the Norn Queen's magic that was intended to empower Loki, and yet he can be solved with a little bit of electricity. I mean, even when you add Thor's hammer's lightning power to this electricity from the third rail, that would be enough to short circuit the Norn Queen's magic. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, I suppose that he does come back, so maybe it actually doesn't. But the explanation to me just seems a bit too convenient, if you can see what I'm saying. It's just one of those things. It's kind of this goofy Silver Age solution. And then they have to rush the story to a close in three panels. So it kind of like the story ends because they run out of space. Sociologically, this story comes at a really interesting time in American history, and it's interesting that Stan kind of grafted onto that for the plot of this. Obviously, 1968 was the year that we lost Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and here in the later part of 1969, we have Stan revisiting that. This story is very much of its era, much in a way that a story about terrorism, perhaps, would be very much of its era today. And the sort of paranoia and the weird feeling of society back during that time, the time of uncertainty of the late 1960s, when really everything was in flux and everything was changing. It's a kind of a dark kind of a topic for a Marvel comic, and especially a Marvel comic written by Stan Lee. But it works, I guess, in this case, and definitely let it not be said that Marvel comics were not, to some degree, mirroring the society that they were created in. And this was also during a time of flux for Marvel comics, because we're really right at the edge of the Silver Age. We're really in an era where stories are starting to become more and more sophisticated. This is still, of course, very much part of the old way. This is definitely still a Silver Age story. But we see ourselves moving that way slightly. We have a little bit more of a mature theme emerging here. And this is something that once Lee and Kirby leave the book, we're going to start seeing a lot more of as we progress through the 1970s and into the present day. All right. So with that, it's about time to wrap up the show. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. As always, you can email the show if you want to. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also join us on Facebook. Just look for Radio Free Asgard there and you will find us. So with that, I am off and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.